Jess Talbert had it all.
He has so many people to thank.
I hate her so much.
Beauty, fame, love.
That's a cut.
But her life...
Next time, could you wear a swimsuit underneath the towel?
...just turned into one big soap opera.
They're plotting against me every day, all day long.
There's the greedy actress.
I cannot be the villain forever.
I'm sweet. I'm tender. I'm a victim.
The sex star producer.
You do want me, don't you, David?
In the weirdest way.
And you know what you have to do.
I murder some homeless girl? Are you nuts?
One weaked out writer.
I will just say Maggie went to Tibet to visit the Dalai Lama, spiritual thing.
I thought the Dalai Lama moved to L.A.
Well, then some other Lama then. It doesn't matter. Fernando Lama, come on.
And the most brilliant actor alive.
Rod Randall comes back from Vienna?
So, he wasn't killed. He was maimed.
The guy was decapitated.
They froze the head.
How am I supposed to write for a guy that doesn't have a head?
All right, well, we haven't figured that out yet.
Well, who plays it?
Close, Celeste. Maybe I should have sent a memo.
Things are hard for me right now, in life and on the show, okay?
Things were hard for me 20 years ago when you spat me out and left me for dead. At last, drama.
Help me!
You're kidding.
You're an egomaniac.
Of course I'm an egomaniac. I've got America's sweetheart climbing up my drain pipe.
It's a story of jealousy.
If I hurt you, I'm really sorry. I was very young.
Not anymore, babe.
Lust.
Yummy.
With a spoon.
And family reunions.
I'm carrying his child.
One more date, we would have had a Greek tragedy on our hands.
Where a nervous breakdown.
No! I didn't sleep with her! Will somebody please believe me?
No!
Is all in a day's work.
Now this
I don't
is
want
a show.
You're crazy! You're nuts!
Now why can't I write stuff like this?
Sally Field.
I don't think you realize how serious this operation is.
Please.
You will not have a brain when it is complete.
I don't want my brain. I don't need it. Take the thing.
Gone.
Kevin Kline.
You try playing Willy Loman in front of a bunch of old twits eating meatloaf, chewing and slurping and spitting out their pits.
Whoopi Goldberg.
You know, I would think you were acting, but you've never been this good.
And Robert Downey Jr.
I'm gonna seriously review this relationship.
In Soap Dish.
There's a nurse in the restaurant. Did I miss a meeting?
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight we're going to talk about the 1991 movie Soap Dish, directed by Michael Hoffman.
Who?
He also directed the Kevin Kline, Michelle Pfeiffer version of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh. Oh, that was great. Never seen it.
Yeah, I'd never seen it either. So whose list was this movie on?
My list.
Okay, Brother Jay?
Yes?
Take us back to 1991, Soap Dish.
I remember this being hilariously funny at the time. It grossed $36 million, so it must have done good business. Although I can't find a budget for it, so.
All right. So, Drew, do you have any history with this?
I think I'd seen it before. Didn't really remember it. No real history with it.
Like, this would have been right around when I would have quit, I think. The theater.
This movie was so bad that it derailed your career in the theater.
I like this movie. I didn't think... I don't know.
Yeah, I thought this was a fun farce. I think I remember thinking that at the time and revisiting it. I kind of liked it. Everybody's young.
Yeah, so this played at the theater. That's why I've seen this, I'm sure, because this was May. And then July was Terminator 2, and I quit right before Terminator 2 started.
No, you were definitely still working there when Terminator 2 hit the theaters.
Well, I I was technically still working, but I had quit. I mean, I was still on the books.
That sounds like a story for another time.
But I quit, and then I didn't really have a job, and so I went and got hired for a day at Lamont's as the shoe dude, and then they never called to schedule me. So I went and applied at Fred's, and Fred's hired me as Christmas help, and that's when I got my career at Fred's. And my first day live as a cashier after training was Black Friday, which was also my birthday. And Mom and Dad came to take me to lunch, and we went to Harry's for lunch.
Fun.
So that's what I remember about 1991. So this movie was at the movie theater, would have been at the movie theater at the time. So I'm sure that's why I saw it. I'm sure I saw it because at those days I was building films. So I probably, if I didn't preview it, I probably saw it anyway. And for those of you who don't know, playing the home version of the game, back in the day when we actually used 35mm film to show films in a movie theater before it was all digital, your film would come in multiple reels, usually six, and you would have to build it together into one long continuous reel so that you could play it in a long Christie projector.
And then you'd chop it all up and spool it back on the six individual reels and put in those like hexagonal boxes, like luggage things.
Yep. When we were done exhibiting it, that's what we would do. We would remove the splices at the junctures and break them down and send them back.
So, starting with Brother Jay, did you enjoy watching this again?
I did. It made me laugh. It was actually surprisingly pretty funny, and I thought it stood the test of time pretty well. It wasn't really all that dated because it wasn't reliant on too much technology, although some of the TV stuff was a little painful to look at. But I thought it stood up pretty well.
Brother Drew?
I did not enjoy this movie very much. I didn't actively hate it, but there wasn't a lot there for me to really latch onto and love. It was a farce. It had a ton of great, great actors in it. But because of the material and the style, I didn't think they were that compelling to watch. And I don't like Kevin Kline. It's official.
I was wondering if that was going to come up.
Yeah. So it was fine. It was okay.
I enjoyed it because I saw a lot of familiar faces in a way I hadn't seen them in a while. Like Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. was so young. And yeah. Sally Field was, like, still, like, super cute Sally Field. I mean, she still is super cute Sally Field, but now she's super cute old Sally Field. And Whoopi Goldberg, back when she was funny. And Gary Marshall.
Gary Marshall was great.
Ben Stein.
How about Lisa Hartman? No, not yep. Lisa Hartman. Was it Lisa Hartman?
Yeah.
It wasn't Lisa Gibbons.
It was Lisa Gibbons. Right. Sorry. Lisa Hartman was an actress and also married to like Clint Black or something, right?
How about Terry Hatcher's hair?
Oh, yeah.
How about most of the hair?
That's straight out of 1987.
Or 1936 or whatever year The Bride of Frankenstein was.
What about the relatively wooden performance of Elizabeth Shue?
I think is redundant.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. I'm curious to see whether Elizabeth Shue was ever a good actress.
Are you? Do you have something in mind?
Well, she's been in a bunch. She was in 20 Bucks. She was in.
Never seen it.
She was in Adventures in Babysitting, right?
Never seen it.
Is she Oscar winner Elizabeth Shue?
Let's find out, shall we?
What was she nominated for an Oscar for?
Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh, Back to the Future Part 2. Man.
I guess that would be Elizabeth Shue, right? That is a movie that was hard to watch.
Well, she played a prostitute who was sort of, in an emotional shell. So it the role sort of played to her strengths.
Yeah, she won Best Actress in the Leading Role for Leaving Las Vegas in 95. Hollow Man.
Wait, hold on. Did she win or was she just nominated? She was just nominated. I just show a nomination. I don't see a win.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at the American Circuit Community Awards. My mistake.
Okay, for the Blockbuster Video Awards. No, she was nominated.
Won the Critic Films Association. So, this is crap list.
Yeah, what list are you looking at?
The IMDb list of awards. Okay.
Yeah, she was nominated for Golden Globe and a BAFTA and Academy Award, but didn't win any of those. Oh, she was nominated for a Saturn Award for her portrayal in Link. Hey, she was nominated for a Blockbuster Entertainment Award. I was just kidding about that. For Hollow Man.
Hollow Man, yeah. Ugh.
And you know what? She was nominated for a Blockbuster Entertainment Award for Best Actress Suspense for The Saint. This isn't even our first Elizabeth Shue movie.
The Saint. Oh,
I forgot
all
about her. That's how wooden her performance was in The Saint. That's true.
So after my, I think, freshman year in college, I came back home for the summer, and sort of my group of high school buddies like still got together at that point. They probably still do. They just don't invite me anymore.
Was there some kind of falling out?
No, I'm just bad at maintaining friendships over long distances.
Ah.
Or having to do any of the work.
Ah. Well, don't wait 25 years like me.
Yeah. So one of my buddies, his the girlfriend he had through most of high school broke up with him after their freshman year apart at college. I think right when they came home for the summer. So he was pretty bummed. So we drug him out of the house one night and we're like, come on, we'll hang out. We'll just watch the movies. It'll be fine. We'll even let you pick out the movies, because we usually didn't, because he had horrible taste in movies.
Oh, no.
So he picked out Leaving Las Vegas and one other. And there's a whole other story that happened while we were at the video store. I won't tell that now. But he wanted to get this movie, and I'd seen it before. I was like, are you sure? He's like, yeah, man, I think I'm in the mood for this. I think this is going to be good for me tonight. I was like, ugh, okay.
Why don't you just get Beaches?
Yeah, so we rented it, and we're watching it, and, like, it's a pretty hard movie to watch, like Eric said. And, like, he was shrinking. My buddy was, like, shrinking throughout the whole movie, and, like, by the end of the movie, he was, like hugging a couch pillow. And just he looked so awful. And I asked him if he was all right. And he was like, where are the flying Elvi?
Oh. He thought it was Honeymoon in Vegas.
Skydiving Elvises?
Yes, he did. He was in the mood for that movie.
Yeah, that's a very different movie.
That is not the movie he got.
Also, I haven't seen that movie in a million years. So.
Was Sarah Jessica Parker in that movie?
Yes. Nick Cage and Sarah Jessica Parker.
And James Caan.
Yeah.
You got a problem with James Caan?
No, I have a problem with James Caan in that movie. That movie, I don't know. I don't have a good memory.
You know,
of that
I got in trouble movie. On the Horror Etc. Facebook group. For saying that Heat was Michael Mann's best movie. I did not think that was going to be a controversial statement.
Well, what were they purporting his best movie to be?
Somebody instantly said, Thief. Mic drop.
Never seen it.
It's a different kind of movie than Heat.
Yeah. It's good, but
still one syllable.
Imagine you took all the slow parts of Heat and spliced them together.
Yeah.
So it's a 15-minute movie?
It's a couple, 2-3 hours.
So Soap Dish, an Aaron Spelling joint.
Yeah.
how weird it was to see Aaron Spelling's name.
Well, it's just a straight up farce. And I thought it inhabited the world it was presenting wonderfully.
Well, considering Aaron Spelling was, you know, Aaron Spelling was made his mark on bad TV dramas.
Well, he was king of the late night soaps, right?
Yeah. It's not surprising he would make a farce of soaps, because I imagine this was poking fun at a lot of people on purpose.
Wait, we have to back up for a second. Name one bad Aaron Spelling drama.
Bad, I guess, is relative, but you know, 90210. Come on,
that was amazing.
So Charlie's Angels, The Love Boat, Dynasty, Beverly Hills 90210,
all
Seventh
amazing.
Heaven.
Never saw it.
Charmed.
Enjoyable.
Jane's House, Sunset Beach.
No, never saw him.
Never heard of those.
He produced the unsuccessful sitcom in 77, The San Pedro Beach Bums.
It sounds awesome.
Interesting. The Dynasty was okay.
So Soap Dish should have been right up my alley, you know, especially given all like the Santa Barbara talk in the early days of our podcast.
Oh, Santa Barbara talk. Okay, so I had to look it up. Susan Lucci had been nominated 19 times for Best or Outstanding Lead Actress in a Daytime Emmy, and she didn't win until 1999. So I thought this was going to be, I thought Sally Field's character was kind of going to be the riff on Susan Lucci.
It was like the antithesis of Susan Lucci.
Well, yeah, kind of.
She just won it every year.
Exactly. And I thought those little, I mean, again, it's a farce. So if you don't think the opening bit where they show the awards show and the clips from the fake soap operas is funny, then that's the moment you need to pull the ripcord. Because you're in for a lot of soap opera jokes. And plays on the soap opera world.
Yeah, I mean, it was... See, that's why when I watched it again, when I rewatched it, I largely thought this was kind of Aaron Spelling kind of poking fun at everybody else.
Sure.
This is kind of a way to be... I'm not sure what the goal was. It made me laugh, but it wasn't overwhelmingly hilarious. But again, I remember it clearly. So when watching it, it felt very familiar. Plus, elements of this are just recycled and recycled and recycled in soap opera plots and in movies today. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I thought I'd forgotten all about the existence of Kathy Moriarty. But I thought she was pretty great.
I thought she had the funniest joke in the movie where she was yelling at Robert Downey Jr.'s character that she's 28 years old, so it's now or never for her. I thought that was a joke because she had to be easily 40. Turns out she wasn't. She was pretty close to 28. I think she was 30 when they made the movie.
It's the makeup.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just
the makeup,
bad at
the big,
guessing ages.
The big hair. No, the makeup, the big hair, and the outfit. Look at all the prostitutes walking around now. The 12-year-olds that look like they're 20. It's amazing what makeup and clothes can do. That's why makeup's bad. Don't let my nieces wear makeup.
Okay, well, we'll fight that battle when we get there.
Taking a stand.
Okay, well. Dream big.
You know, this movie was made at a time when a generation shift, when soap operas had enough shows and activity to have an award show of their own. Because that doesn't happen anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't that many soap operas left.
Well, they have the Daytime Emmys, but I think it's all like reality TV, like Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz and The Doctors. Ugh.
Quackery.
We should provide some relief for our listeners and maybe give them a brief rundown of the plot of a movie.
Well, okay. We have Celeste Talbert, played by Sally Field, a longtime star of the daytime drama The Sun Also Sets. And she's targeted by her ambitious co-star, Montana Moorhead, played by Kathy Moriarty, who is sort of in loose cahoots with Ariel Maloney, played by Terry Hatcher, jealous of Sally Field. But the producer is David Seton Barnes, played by Robert Downey Jr. And Montana Moorhead is basically promising David Seton Barnes sex, no, but never quite giving it to him because he hasn't fired Celeste Talbert yet.
Get rid of her and Mr. Fuzzy is yours.
That was a terrifying line, by the way.
The show's head writer and the best friend of Celeste Talbert's is Rose Schwartz, played by Whoopi Goldberg. And they are trying to do like rating stunts. And so, they come up with this thing where they have to try to kill off Celeste's character, or make her hated. And so they set up a thing where she's going to end up accidentally killing a young, destitute, deaf mute.
Homeless deaf mute.
In the Caribbean, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, because the show takes place in the Caribbean, I think. Or are they there? Well,
move to the Caribbean for some episodes.
Ah, yes. And their million-dollar wave, right?
Yeah, their ridiculous
wave. I loved that wave.
Oh, the wave was great. But, auditioning for a role is a newbie named Lori Craven, played by Elizabeth Shue. And also lurking in the background is another character that they're going to bring back to the show to kind of throw Celeste off her game. And that's Jeffrey Anderson, played by Kevin Kline, who was in a romantic relationship with Celeste, Sally Field, long ago. But when they broke up, Celeste arranged to have him fired off of the show. And he's been doing dinner theater.
Death of a Salesman.
Yes.
Willie Loman.
Yes.
My name is Anderson. Anderson, Anderson.
Not Loman.
They did a good job making him look really old.
Oh, yeah. I thought Kevin Kline was actually fine in this, and except for one scene. But we'll get there. So, blah, blah, blah.
I can already predict Drew's response. One scene? I saw the smirk.
No, he was fine. I thought he did a fine job. Just, there's a charisma deficit there.
Well, we find out that Lori, who's Elizabeth Shue, is actually Celeste's niece, who left college and was coming to make her mark on acting or whatever. And Sally Field is a little upset about that because she's been supporting Lori's college. But, oh well, it's all great. And when she does the scene where Sally Field is supposed to kill the homeless deaf mute, she actually, the deaf mute speaks. And calls her aunt. And then that comes out. And then there's a romantic relationship between Lori and Jeffrey, sorta. Or there would have been, but Sally Field gets in the way. And this is all very slapstick, and I'm sure our mother would not like this part of the movie. Because there's ridiculous...
drainpipe action?
Yes, drainpipe climbing action.
Sounds kind of dirty.
So she managed to break it up and tell the two that they are actually father and daughter.
Because she's the mama.
Yeah, Jeffrey made Celeste pregnant. And that's why she sent, she had Jeffrey fired. And she had the baby during like some sort of like hiatus or something.
Sabbatical.
Yeah.
But they said she had TB.
Yeah, they wrote her off the show for a bit. So... everybody's confounded by this, and it's a very soap opera-y thing anyway, so that's pretty great. And I do like the fact that Lori is like, oh yeah, I would have done him. And was very matter-of-fact about that, when of course Jeffrey is horrified about the whole thing. So now we have heat on the show, and we have, as far as like publicity. So this is not really going Montana and Robert Downey Jr.'s way.
Well, the daughter niece becomes the big star of the show.
Yes. Yes. And it becomes a big old fight between Celeste, Jeffrey, and Lori, who all go in and demand that the other two get fired, that it's either them or me. Which sets up this thing where they do an episode live.
No. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Right. Fucking thing sucks!
And this is where we have the part that I didn't like, where Kevin Klein he's too vain to have glasses. So he turns out he can't read the cue cards. So he keeps flubbing the lines live. Which I thought was a little ridiculous.
It's like Walter being Jewish in The Big Lebowski. It's just too much. It's too much.
He converted. What are you talking about? That's not too much. He converted for his wife.
Too much.
That's a sweet gesture.
It was unnecessary in the movie.
Well, if you're going to the way, I admire them trying it. I just didn't think it fell a little flat. But then in a very non-PC way for 2017, we find out that, let's just skip to the fact that there's a happy ending and everybody is great.
So to speak.
Everybody wins except for Montana, who's revealed as a transsexual and therefore a bad guy. Yeah.
Not a bad guy because he was a transsexual. She was a transsexual. Bad guy because she lied about being pregnant because she couldn't be pregnant because she was a transsexual.
Well, okay, there's that, yeah.
So, she wasn't villainized because of her transsexuality. She was villainized because she lied about being pregnant, which is proved by the transsexuality.
There we go. Okay, so it wasn't as tone deaf as I thought it was.
I don't think it was sinister. It was a bad ploy, but that was the times. Fodder for the grist.
What are you laughing about, Drew?
Well, I think the very fact that you thought that it was insensitive makes you the racist here.
I protest too much.
I was just waiting for Drew to laugh at the fact that I kept interrupting you for a change.
No, I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want you to have to cut it out like the whole Aretha Franklin thing.
So in the end, everybody wins awards except for Montana, who now is playing Willie Loman at the dinner theater.
I think I missed that part.
You missed the ending?
I might have.
Have you just given up?
I don't remember going back to the dinner theater. I mean, it makes complete sense. But no, I watched the credits. I watched the credits hoping there was something at the end.
There wasn't.
I'm sorry, Jason, you were saying?
The generational shift in this movie, because everybody was smoking in this movie like a chimney.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 1991.
So that was one thing. It made me laugh. Robert Downey Jr. had this amazing dartboard necktie.
Oh, Robert Downey Jr. was great, because it was... it was like all cleaned up, Robert Downey Jr.
Well, was this all cleaned up or was this pre-rehab Robert Downey Jr.?
I'm sure it was pre-rehab, but it was during one of his all cleaned up periods.
Carrie Fisher played a very strong woman role.
Yes, which is sort of the reason I bumped it up on the calendar, because she had kind of a empty nest Christy McNichol haircut.
Yeah.
And a saucy role.
Her character was hilarious.
Her character was a boss.
Yeah.
That was very, very good, Mark. Very true. I love what you're doing. I think we could try it one more time, and this time, I don't know. Maybe try one without your shirt.
Sure.
Hi. I'm Lori Craven, and I'm an actress.
An actress? Really? How nice for you. I'm Betsy Faye Sharon. And I'm a bitch. Now get out of here.
Miss Sharon.
That was a boss character.
Casting director.
Yeah. She was the female version of the male stereotype.
Yes, exactly.
And there was at least one scene later where she was just like sort of off center in the frame and she was like getting a little quick action from the casting couch dude that she hired. It was like right before they were about to shoot one of the soap scenes. That was a nice little touch I appreciated.
Yeah. And Gary Marshall as the network head was great.
Celeste had a giant Stoli bottle with a straw coming out of it in bed. That was awesome.
Did you know who did the voice uncredited for Celeste's husband?
It was so familiar, but I couldn't make it out.
Frank Underwood.
It was Frank Underwood. Also,
nice.
Kaiser Sose. Spoiler.
Very nice. I hate that movie.
I remember loving that movie, but I don't know if it'll hold up.
I hate that movie. I hate it. I hate it so much.
He'll flip you for real.
You just don't like Gabriel Byrne after being disappointed with Cruel World.
I love Gabriel Byrne. I don't think I've ever seen Cruel World.
Brad Pitt? Gabriel Byrne? A naughty animated Kim Basinger? I mean, what's not to love?
Nope.
Brad Pitt's hair should have gotten like third billing.
Yes. Yeah, probably not a very good movie. But
well, we're all about not very good movies sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. So I'm saying maybe it's because it's a comedy. Maybe it's... are we calling this a meh?
It's a meh.
The episode itself, I'm sensing a little bit of meh. Good thing we have lots of housekeeping. Drew, you said you had definite opinions. What you lay it on us.
It's meh.
So you were just screwing with me when I sent you a text earlier saying, we might not have a bunch to talk about because it was fine, but it wasn't any, you know. And Drew's like, I disagree.
I disagree that it was fine. No, I mean, this... I have definite opinions about this movie. This movie has a lot of elements, and it should have worked, and I'm a little confounded as to why it didn't for me. I don't know if it was just the mood I was in while I was watching it, or just the fact that Kevin Kline was in it, and I find him really annoying. But there's a lot of people I like in it. I like Sally Field. I like Robert Downey Jr. I like Carrie Fisher. Gary Marshall was great. I love all the shots they took at bad soap operas. I love the beefcake running in from the beach wearing like the really skimpy tank top who can't act. He was hilarious. I love the wave machine. But it
you
just,
noticed that it was Patch giving the award soap opera awards. So
I was excited to see Patch. That was a great nod to the world of soap operas. He was in the beginning and the end. That was fantastic.
Yes.
But it didn't come together. You mentioned Elizabeth Shue. You know, she kind of had a cute smile in the beginning of the movie, but that's all she brought to the table. Yeah, she kind of ruined every scene she was in, I thought. Terry Hatcher had nothing to do except look weird.
Well, and she was the foil.
Yeah, she did fine. She just didn't have much to work with.
Yeah, she didn't have anything to do.
She was dressed like a hooker or a chorus girl half the time.
Yeah, and it made me pine for old school Whoopi Goldberg, where she was actually fun to watch.
The future's toughest cop is Katie Coltrane.
I'm back.
And now she's getting a new partner. His name is Teddy.
Hit me.
He's a dinosaur.
You two solve this case together.
What? What?
It's a dinosaur.
New partner, Coltrane?
He's got the style.
I'm here for a new look.
Step right up.
Push the button.
He's a cop.
Mahalo.
I gotta make him look like a real cop.
I'm too sexy for my clothes.
That thing at the table just clacked at me.
He's got horns for you. It's very normal.
He's got the charm.
Your mind's shut down and your glands have taken over.
And he's got the appetite.
You cannot eat our only suspect.
To come out.
Yes.
On time.
Boom!
I'm amazing.
New Line Cinema presents.
Hey, you think you're gonna get somebody?
Whoopi Goldberg.
Can you just slide your butt? Yeah, that's great.
Like that?
And introducing. Teddy.
Sweets. Ah. One per customer.
Theodore Rex. It's a tale you'll never forget.
I love when he does that.
Jumpin' Jack Flash, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. But, yeah, she kind of got all serious after Star Trek The Next Generation. But, so it had all sorts of things, and it should have been a lot better, but I think maybe it played it too safe. It was really predictable. You know, there's nothing surprising about it, and if you're not going to be surprising, then I think you need to have some transcendent material, and they did not. So that's my strong feeling, is one of disappointment, because it had all the elements. You know, I'm not a hater of soap operas. I think they can be quite enjoyable. And this kind of towed the line right between it. It didn't revere soap operas, but it also didn't really take them down. It just kind of played it safe. Let everybody just kind of played it safe, and that's what made it meh. Because there's so much talent in this movie when you run down the list. So ultimately, I find it very disappointing.
Who would you have recast then in the Elizabeth Shue and Kevin Kline roles? If you could. If it would have made it better. Like Jim Carrey?
No. Definitely not.
Like Dana Carvey? No,
obviously it would be Kevin Spacey. And either Alyssa Milano or perhaps Winona Ryder.
Why not just have cast Shannon Doherty at that point?
Yeah. She's probably except she had the reputation for being hard to work with. She may actually have already been fired by Aaron Spelling by then.
If you had put 1991 Alyssa Milano in this movie, this would have been an all-time great.
Okay. Christina Applegate.
Yes, Christina Applegate. I was just going to say. There's a pop.
Beat you to it. I knew where you were going. Perfect. I could see it forming.
Ah, awesome.
Sorry, I'm not trying to bring you guys down. It sounded like you guys enjoyed this movie way more than I did.
Oh, yeah. You won't bring it down. It's just hard to talk about. We got to stop reviewing comedies is what the deal is.
I think that's the deal. Maybe we should... I have a movie that I want to swap out with something, so we can swap it out for DC Cab if you want.
No, I really love the fact that on our calendar we go from DC Cab to Sicario. That is going to be a jolt.
I don't even know what that other movie's about.
Well, you're going to know in the first 3 minutes that it's not DC Cab.
So, Brother Jay, you want to give a verdict?
Nah, yeah, it's a C. If you like bad comedy, this is your movie. This is a good bad comedy movie.
Drew, was it worth it?
No, you should rent Madhouse instead.
Listen to me, ladies and gentlemen. Lock your doors. Don't answer the phone. If you have to leave the country, then leave the country, but don't let them in.
What are you talking about?
I am talking about house guests from hell.
We're here.
They came by air.
Meet your cousin. What? And Jesse.
No!
Oh, no.
They came by land.
You wouldn't happen to have any good scotch, would you?
And then they started to multiply.
They looked insane.
We are not insane. We're from New Jersey.
And multiply.
I'm building bleachers for a TV set.
Uncle Mark, I think I just ran over your cat.
Ah! Oh, God, I'm going to have a blood baby!
Some house guests came unannounced.
Maybe we're in some vacation guide for the dam.
Some announced.
This is the police. We have you surrounded.
We have to do something about these people.
Then, one day.
You touch me, I sue you.
Mark and Jesse snapped. When house guests become house pests, it's time to exterminate. John Larroquette, Kirstie Alley.
They're animals. They're cockroaches. If we have a nuclear war, the only living thing to survive will be house guests!
Madhouse. Misery is company.
We'll keep you updated as this bizarre story unfolds.
Madhouse. Have I ever seen Madhouse? Vincent Price and Peter Cushing? Kirstie Alley and John Larroquette.
That's the one.
Jordan Ladd and Natasha Lyonne.
Wow.
Those are your choices. I want to see the Jordan Ladd and Natasha Lyonne one now.
The second one. I remember Jason hyperventilating at, excuse me, I'm saying excuse me in Madhouse.
Hmm.
It happened.
I'm not saying it didn't. I don't.
Okay, here's a quote from Madhouse. I need your opinion on something here. These are my favorite names for a baby so far. Amaretta, Caramel, or Treblinka?
I don't know why that's funny.
You yokel naming your baby after a German concentration camp? I thought Treblinka was one of those cute little fairies from Cinderella. You moron. I hope my water breaks all over your fur coat.
Is that how we ended up with an email thread at one point where we were like the crematorium ice cream?
Oh, I don't know.
Sobibor Ripple.
The tagline for Madhouse is brilliant. The tagline is, the bad news is you have house guests. There is no good news.
I don't remember this movie.
You loved it. We rented it from Video City, and I think you had us watch it like at least four times before we turned it in the next day.
Dennis Miller. Kirstie
yeah,
Alley.
I'm looking.
Wow. Well, is it available on streaming anyplace?
I have no idea. I doubt it. Why would it be? Nobody remembers this movie.
Okay, so rent Madhouse instead. Excellent. That's good advice. Let's see. I've described movies like this before, but I'll use the same old, in this case, cliche by me. Is this is just a fun confection. It won't enrich your life in any way, but I thought it was a fun experience to watch it. I can kind of agree with Drew being, you know, it's not a brilliant piece of work, but I thought it was perfectly pleasant, and it was fun to see actors that I feel good thoughts toward.
Yeah, it's nice to have familiar people, and especially nice to see them young and vibrant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I am also suffering because it's been since late October that we've watched a movie where I could really like sink my teeth into.
Well, you can really sink your teeth into some Octopussy next week. Or not. And then we have Gross Point Blank, Octopussy, followed by Gross Point Blank, followed by DZ Cab, and then Sicario. So I guess we're on to housekeeping as we're already talking about the calendar. Brother Jay, do you have housekeeping this week?
Anything? Nothing leaps to mind at the moment.
Brother Drew?
R.I.P. Smarmy Dude from RoboCop.
Yes.
No, are you talking about Miguel Ferrer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Albert from Twin Peaks.
Oh, he's been in everything. And
yeah.
And I didn't realize he was Rosemary Clooney and Jose Ferrer's son.
I know, me neither.
Which means he's cousin to George Clooney.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pour one out for him.
He was in Crossing Jordan, which I watched. That was, you know.
Oh, he had just that gonna die of lung cancer any second voice from the time he was like 12.
Well, and he made it into the new Twin Peaks reboot. So,
and he was young. He was 61.
Yeah, throat cancer. I should say that boyfriend Jesse and I just finished Twin Peaks.
Is it worth the effort to go back and watch it all? Because I have it all. I just haven't.
It is really worth watching.
Do you want to marathon it? I mean, is that how you should do it?
I would binge it in stages. Watch three episodes probably at a time. There are a couple episodes where you're definitely going to stop for a bit. I don't want to give any spoilers specifically, but I can give you episode numbers. I can provide you with episode numbers if you'd like a list. What I will say is that there's a couple episodes that I had forgotten when I rewatched them last year, last fall. There are episodes that I had forgotten what actually happened. And when I saw it unfold, I actually took a break after one of the episodes. I said, I need a couple of days to process this. So the second season is more, way more batshit crazy than the first, but in kind of a disorganized, crazy David Lynchian way, less in the scary, murdery way that the first season is. So there's definitely different tones from season to season, but I would definitely not watch it one off. I would definitely watch a couple, two or three episodes at a time. And just the last episode is the last episode is shit. The last episode is just garbage.
Should you stop before it, or do you need to watch it?
Well, it's really hard to quantify that because it ties up a lot of the loose ends on purpose, but it will piss you off, most likely, because it pissed me off. It still pisses me off to watch the last episode. And I know Mom just finished it and was pissed off at the last episode. So, coming up this weekend, boyfriend Jesse and I will watch the movie Firewalk with Me, which he's never seen. So that will be an experience.
Yeah. Does he like horror movies?
He does.
Okay. Cause I think we determined this was a horror movie.
We did. And then he bought me the Twin Peaks history book for Christmas. And so we're kind of enjoying looking through that. So I'm looking forward to, and I don't know, the new season of Twin Peaks, season one of the reboot starts in May, and I just don't know.
What channel?
Showtime. So I'm going to have to friggin' buy a subscription.
Like an online Showtime Go or whatever that's called?
Yep. I'm about ready to, I'm almost done with the cable box. It's about ready to go back to Comcast, so I'm going to cut the cord, and I figure if I cut the cord, I can justify, you know, maybe $10 for an instant Showtime. We'll see. If it's like, if they have an ancillary Hulu or something.
You can wait until, you know, it's a couple weeks out from the season finale, and then you can get a 30-day free trial.
Well, that's probably what I'll do, except I don't know if I can wait. I don't know if my willpower is strong enough to allow me to wait.
Now, are you one of the people that will watch an episode and then go, like, search out, like, podcasts that talk about each individual episode?
Nope.
Okay, yeah.
Nope.
Because I'm not at that point either. Nope. Although I'm thinking of dipping my toe into the podcast called Rose Buddies. It's about The Bachelor. I don't watch The Bachelor, but the McElroy family added that one to their list of podcasts, and apparently it's awesome. You don't even have to watch the show to like the podcast.
I don't troll online forums. I don't seek out fan fiction. I like my brain to interpret it, and I'm good with that.
Fair enough.
I would be that guy that would argue with people on online forums, so I don't want to be that guy.
That's probably wise. So, okay, so here's my housekeeping, and it's just a couple movies I watched that I thought were interesting enough to talk about, but not necessarily to put on the calendar. I watched the Coen Brothers' The Man Who Wasn't There, Billy Bob Thornton gig in black and white.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't like the Billy Bob Thornton character enough to enjoy the movie all that much. I thought it was very stylish, but not as much substance. It was fine, but I guess I'm not going to put it on the calendar unless you guys have something you're dying to talk about it. Then I watched the 1955 Diabolique with Simone Signoret in French. And then I watched half of 1996's Diabolique with Sharon Stone, Isabella Gianni, and Chaz Palminteri.
Ooh.
You couldn't make it through?
No, I couldn't. No, it turns out Isabella Gianni is just not easy to watch.
She's like a French Kevin Kline, it sounds like.
Maybe. And Sharon Stone did a great job in the same role. And Chaz Palminteri was fine. He had a little different version. And it was nice to see Spalding Gray in the 1996 version. But Turns out maybe I don't think Diabolique is the greatest movie anyway. So just doing a almost scene for scene remake, I thought it was way cooler at the time than it turned out to be. But then I saw a weird movie that I still don't know whether it is a legit documentary or a like a horror movie maybe, or a suspense movie that's bundled to look like a documentary. It's called The Russian Woodpecker. Have you heard of it?
No, but it nope. Sounds amazing.
Oh no, Drew, this is right up your alley. It's a filmmaker, a Russian or a Ukrainian filmmaker who, when he was young, they moved all the kids out of Kiev because of the Chernobyl accident. So he's a weirdo. And again, I spent most of this movie thinking that he was an actor, not a real guy, but it purports to be a documentary and I've looked it up online and it's just weird. Anyway. Is it Pripyat? What's the name of the city?
Pripyat.
Pripyat. Okay. In Pripyat, where Chernobyl is, or just outside of that area, but in the same, like, you can see the remains of Chernobyl in the same, like, view as you see this gigantic antenna array. It's like a big wall. It's enormous. And there's a shortwave thing called the Russian Woodpecker that was, I think it was like 10 megahertz or something.
Is called the woodpecker because it makes a pecking noise.
It lasted for years and years and years, and they thought it was anything from like Soviet mind control experiments to try to beam like sound waves over the pole to America to disrupt our dreams and stuff, or it was kind of the equivalent of our Dew Line, a missile like warning system or whatever, except that they had these big powerful transmitters as well as the receivers. So it talks about this, and the documentary proposes, because it takes place at the same time where Russia came in and had that, took over Crimea and like half of the Ukraine. And he's investigating this thing, this big array. He's investigating this and he thinks he comes to the conclusion that Chernobyl was an inside job to cover up that the radar thing never worked properly because it was supposed to be inspected and they had spent several billion rubles or whatever. And so the top person in the Soviet system ordered them to do those special tests at Chernobyl that caused it to
melt. So they engineered the worst nuclear accident ever to cover up the theft of billions of dollars in bad technology.
Yes.
Oh. Well, that's comforting. Speaking of Chernobyl, have you seen the new sarcophagus that they built?
Oh, is it the big dome thing they dropped on it?
The big motorized. No, they built this giant sarcophagus on rails that they slid over the top of it. It's amazing. You should check it out on YouTube. It's amazing. As an engineering family, I'd be willing to bet that Drew and or Dad would be pretty impressed by it.
Okay, well, look up Duga, the DUGA, Duga, the Duga radar, and you'll see the big array at Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah, I see.
And anyway, so I don't know if I recommend the documentary because it's just kind of a weird thing. And like I said, I don't really know what the purpose was, because there's some like political things going on that I won't really give away in case you do want to watch it, because it has kind of it gets into a twisty bit. But if nothing else, it has him go, you know, it shows him going up in the array. And so you can see how really impressive it is. Because even this picture on the Wikipedia page, you don't really get a sense of the scale.
I just sent you both a link of the sarcophagus video.
You should also look up White Alice antenna.
Yeah. That's what I thought of when I saw the documentary. That, oh, Drew would dig the Duga radar thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could we invent a fake documentary where we proposed that the White Alice site was meant for communication, but it really, this is, by the way, not what the Russian Woodpecker suggests, but in our version, in my version of it, it will be very much like the H.P. Lovecraft Cool Air, I think, where you flip it on and instead of communicating greatly, instead you can kind of see, I guess from beyond too, you can kind of see into the world that we can't normally see. And we go mad because we can't deal with it.
Oh.
Because science, in the H.P. Lovecraft's world, science always leads to discoveries that you don't really want to know. You'd be better off in ignorance.
Well, somebody is already saying that the reason everything is happening in the last 6 months is because we turned on the Hadron Collider.
Of course, yeah. Well, if it wasn't that, it would be the harp, right? Angels don't play that harp. If we talked to George Norrie and Art Bell...
Art Bell.
Yeah.
Is he still around?
Coast to coast. No. He eloped with his underage bride.
Was she underage? I thought she was just...
I don't remember. I think she was probably of age.
He's been plotting a comeback, but he had a brief comeback and then went back into seclusion because he was getting... There was a thing that happened that he claims was government interference. Yeah, so he's still alive. He's just not broadcasting that I know of.
Yeah. He's probably narrow casting somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.